Skip is a graduate of Georgetown University, where he studied electrical engineering, international economics, and fine arts. Skip Peasy? I've known this guy for about 30 years or so, I think. It's been that long.
All right. Thanks, Keith. Appreciate it. Hi, everyone. might want to hold that till the end, see if you still think that way. Thanks. Full disclosure, I am not a vendor. However, I am here to make a sales pitch, kind of mix things up a little bit, of sorts, for all of us to try to get this important initiative to the finish line. We're making good progress. That's what I'll report on here, but also show you where the obstacles that still lie in our path take place. First of all, I think we all have to acknowledge the fact that we have these amazing devices we're all carrying around here, access to the sum total of human knowledge in a couple of touches, and we use them to look at pictures of cats and get into arguments with people that we don't even know. So that's good use of the. But the fact is that the technology also includes a lot of hardware integration. I know a lot of us probably don't carry cameras much anymore. We just use the phone. Also, we don't have some of the other things that we used to have multiple devices for. They're all being integrated. And certainly, FM radio, if you had it on there, well, heck, you could listen to this session in your seat there, or maybe even up in your room. How legal are we? I love that Volkswagen legal. That's a new term we'll have to start using in engineering. Getting FM is obviously an easy thing to do. The fact is, the tuners are already on there, and we'll take a look at that. It's just getting them hooked up. Hooked up to the software and hooked up to an antenna, an appropriate antenna, which may be either an embedded antenna or hooked up to the headphone jack for use with the headphone wire as a longer antenna to pick up the VHF frequencies we're looking for here. So we'll do a quick rundown of all these areas here today to show you. I think you're already aware of the advantages, but we want to show you where the sales are because in terms of the ones that have FM enabled and those that don't. And the different levels of the way a smartphone could be ready or not, and it's not as simple as just flipping a switch or turning it on or throwing an app on there in many cases. We'll look at it because it's now starting to be different with different carriers. The same phone sold by different carriers may have different levels of FM capability, which is interesting, something fairly new. And then we'll tear down a couple of phones and look at the under the hood, and also compare power consumption with FM listening to streaming over the internet. Some interesting findings here that NAB is doing, NAB Labs is doing for the benefit of the industry, because nobody else really is doing it. We're doing some ourselves, and we're also leveraging some third-party data from other research, outside research firms that we've hired. Also working with the folks over at Amis, who are doing also a lot of things on hybrid radio, one of the key implementations or applications of this capability, also on behalf of the entire industry. So for the advantages, obviously, I think it's pretty clear that there's benefits both to the consumers, to the wireless carriers themselves, and also to broadcasters, obviously. It's easy to implement, low cost to the carriers and the manufacturers. It's also really already there. The service is established. You get this argument a lot of times when you're trying to get new stuff put onto devices from the consumer electronics manufacturers that said, well, we'll wait. It's the chicken and egg thing. We'll wait till you guys have the service deployed. Well, you couldn't have anything more ubiquitously deployed already than FM radio. There is the capability to listen longer on FM than you might on the similar services or identical services available via streaming over the internet. And of course, there's no data plan. Now, this is a benefit to consumers, might be considered a disadvantage to carriers. But on the other hand, the benefit to carriers is that they can get rid of some of the traffic on their network, which is always something that consumers complain about, slow internet access. And if you're, it depends on your point of view from a business model. For example, Sprint that still uses unlimited data, that's a bonus for them, a win-win. They get a network offloading and they don't lose any money because their data plans are unlimited. Whereas other carriers that charge by the bit, or at least by tiers, may have that's a double-edged sword for them. So they have to look at it from a business perspective. And of course you have local content, which most of your national streaming services certainly don't. So that's an important element just in terms of content. One of the final things is this idea that you could actually now have a device that has both an FM receiver and an internet connection. How can you use those two together? This powerful synergy that develops from that, what we're calling hybrid radio, is a really, really cool new experience. And broadcasters are the only ones who can actually implement it, because broadcasters are the only ones who really live in both worlds, or can if they want to. But you just need a device that has both ways of connection. A unidirectional FM receiver and a bidirectional internet connection. Putting those two together on the same device with one that one app can access is a really pretty cool thing. As you may have seen, if you're familiar at all with Next Radio, which is the first real broadly deployed hybrid radio system, centrally managed system in the U.S. and maybe elsewhere soon. So let's look at what's going on with the sales. This is the last data we have from the second quarter of this year. We're usually a couple of months behind getting the data together, collecting it from all the sources that we need to. But as you can see, that blue wedge there is getting a pretty good size. 37%, we think, or about that, a little more than a third of the, so one in three of the phones sold today, have FM capability that is activated by at least one carrier. Now, as I said before, some of those phones that we're counting by manufacturer's data, some of those phones may not be enabled by some of the carriers. So we're now starting to get our data by carrier, and we hope in the very near future, later this year, to be able to start showing how this works by carrier to get a better, a little more fine-grained report. But for now, we have that first asterisk there that says that number is the phones that at least one carrier has activated. So we know the phone works with that, it has all the requisite hardware capability and software, at least in the version that one carrier has put out. Other carriers may put out different software that, even though the phone can do FM, the software that they load in it, or that they have their manufacturers load in it for them, may or may not support the capability. So that's an interesting thing that we've just started to see with the differentiation of carriers, and that's why we're starting to look at that more carefully. And then that little 3% wedge are phones that we know work elsewhere outside the country. It used to be a lot bigger, but now that's almost a negligible percentage, because at least Sprint is, if a phone can do FM, Sprint is putting it out with FM and with Next Radio app preloaded, in fact, on the phone when the customer buys it. Some of the other carriers are not doing that yet, but we've gotten some recent commitments from the two other major carriers to say they're probably going to do the same thing. But we still have more than half of the phones that cannot do FM, even though they all, 100% of those, the entire pie, has an FM chip on the phone, as far as we know. It's in the same chip they use for Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, and we'll look at a couple of those in the teardown in a second. Another key component here, though, it's not just the carriers, but it's Apple. The iPhone, even when a carrier like Sprint says, we want you to activate the FM chip that's in there, and Apple's had it in there since the 3GS, low those many years ago, They've never activated it, though. And Apple's a big enough gorilla in the marketplace to say, even to a carrier that wants them to activate it, they're not activating it. So when you look at about half of the sales of every quarter are one flavor or another of iPhone, there's usually two or three versions that are offered new at any one time. Right now you have the 5, the 6, and the newly announced 6S, for example. If you add all of them up in any given quarter, they're typically about half of the market of that quarter's sales. And so if you want to get past the 50% point in activation, it's Apple that you have to convince, as well as the carriers. So it's kind of a two-pronged battle here that we're fighting. And so you're seeing more and more of the non-activated phones becoming Apple's only. And so that's going to marginalize them. And so hopefully now that we have three of the four major carriers in the US, that will sort of put that last carrier in a corner and kind of, if nothing else, shame them into going along, maybe, we'll see. Same hope will happen with Apple, but Apple's pretty impervious to that kind of activity. They kind of do their own thing. So we'll see where that ends up. Anyway, this is a sort of a historical chart. You can see the difference that happened, what we call the Sprint effect, when Sprint made the commitment to activate all their Android phones, at least. You see what happened in like the middle of 2014, a big jump. And again, we have this argument from the carriers, or we kind of used to have it, where they said, our consumers aren't asking for this. Well, if you build it, they will come, as we're showing here. As soon as Sprint let that happen, only on some of its phones at first, and gradually pretty much all of their Android phones, you see the jump. And this is all still this growth that continues up to the latest numbers we have, as I said, from up to the second quarter, July of this year. June 30th this year, we have a still seeing growth from the Sprint effect. And we now know that in the next year we're going to have more commitments from the other, even bigger carriers, we expect that to continue. Again, on Android phones, and actually on Windows phones too, which have had FM pretty much from the beginning. All of them, and a few of the Android phones did. Now we're seeing more and more as the carriers ask for it. This is a historical chart of the percentage. Notice that even as the sales, the blue line is total sales of smartphones quarter to quarter. You can see it's pretty volatile. Goes up a lot in the fourth quarter every year, as most consumer electronics stuff does. But even as that's going up and down, the number in the orange line of FM-activated phones continues to rise. So our percentage has never been closer than it is right now. And in fact, we can look a little bit historically. This is the chart I showed you a second ago from the second quarter. If we go back to the first quarter of this year, you see the blue pie slice get smaller, and if we go back further, this is a cumulative data from calendar year 2014. The last year, overall, we had barely 20%, and when we started, if you go back to 2013, when we really started counting, in 2012 we started counting, look where we started, you know, single digits, low single digits. So we've made a lot of progress already, but still a long way to go. So this is good news, but it's not good enough yet. So we need to push forward to the conclusion. So let's look at what's really going on in these phones. There's really a whole set of different levels of what we might call FM readiness. All of the phones are at least what I'm calling class one. In other words, the chip is on there. The connectivity chip, as they call it, includes Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and FM. Almost all the phones, with a negligible percentage that don't have FM capability on smartphones. We're not talking about feature phones, although a lot of those have it too, but not with Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, just with a dedicated FM chip. But in any event, we have it on pretty much all the phones. But is it hooked up? So in class two, we say, yes, it's hooked up and connected. That is, an antenna is hooked up to the chip that can work with FM frequencies, VHF frequencies, and it can connect to the rest of the system in the phone with the audio output, probably even the data output going to the screen through an API that shows RDS data and other kinds of elements. And then, but in some cases, there's no app on there to let the user actually even know that they have that capability. So there are a few phones that are class two only. Everything's working, but there's no app on it. And then all you have to do is get the app on there, which you could download the Next Radio app from the from an Android app store. And in some cases, that's all you need to do to get it to work. Or the manufacturer can flash something that can change the software to make it work. So class three is the FM is working, at least with some kind of native FM tuner capability. And then the top level is where a Next Radio app or a similar app that engages the whole hybrid radio, which means it pulls some stuff in, synchronized data from the internet, and while you're listening to audio coming over the FM. And that's the kind of gold standard that we're going for. And this is what really interests the carriers, because when they see that, they say, wow, you know, this is actually a pretty cool app. It's not just an old school rust belt radio technology that they look at as being kind of downscale. And a few phone manufacturers have put FM on their low-end smartphones, but not on their high-end. That's Motorola's, for example. They have three phones. Their top one, the Moto X, they don't put FM on, but the other two, the G and the E, which are considered to be downscale, they put FM there because they figure, oh, the FM users, you know, that's the fast food stuff. The high-end user, fine dining person, wants to use the internet only for streaming. Well, when you put an app that shows this kind of cool capability that is every bit as good, if not better, than if streaming apps are, but using FM, then all of a sudden you've got parity. You say, well, you know, maybe this is something we should consider as a high-end kind of an application, just happens to be utilizing the FM receiver for part of the incoming service. And that's kind of right where we want to be. We're right there in parity with some of these other services that are competing with FM listening. This is in the handheld device. The same argument's going to apply in the car as the next kind of theater of warfare here. So there's some examples of that hierarchy of what we're talking about. Some of the phones that kind of illustrate, and some cases which carrier illustrates that. For example, the Verizon on the HTC One M8, which was a pretty popular phone last year, they had the same capability as AT&T and Sprint had with the with that phone. This was a classic case of differentiation of implementations. The same phone, when you got it from Sprint, worked great with Next Radio on board. That same phone, when you got it from AT&T or T-Mobile, by the way, was a Class 3 phone that had an HTC native FM app that just worked like a straight tuner did give you RDS, but not much more. Didn't give you hybrid capability. However, on those phones, you could go to the Google App Store, the Google Play or Android App Store, and download Next Radio, and you'd have Next Radio capability yourself. Verizon, same phone, no FM app, no HTC native app, no Next Radio app. So the user didn't even know they had FM capability on it, and the manual said nothing about it. However, with that same phone, you could go, again, to the App Store, download Next Radio, and all of a sudden, even on Verizon's phone, you could get it, and it would work. The M9, the successor phone, not quite so successful, but the same deployment came out this year with Sprint having it with Next Radio, AT&T and T-Mobile having it with the HTC FM app, native app, and Verizon having made HTC change the software so that the user could no longer download the Next Radio app and have it work. If a user of an M9 tried to do that, they tried to launch it, they got the same error message that any user that had a non-functioning FM would get. You can download the Next Radio app to any Android phone, and it looks to see when you try to launch it if there's FM, and if it's not there, or it can't see it, the tuner, it just gives you an error message. Well, the M9, that's the same error message you got, even though we know that it's totally worked on the previous version. So Verizon actually went in and actively broke something that, in this case, we know that already worked on the phone. So this is about the most egregious example you can see of a carrier actively thwarting FM capability on a phone that is otherwise completely working with FM, and in fact could support even the highest level of hybrid radio functionality. So this is something that Verizon customers should be a little ticked off about if they wanted to use the hybrid radio. And so a lot of folks that had the M8 have stayed with it, even though it's a really good phone. It actually has probably the best audio of any phone on the market. Stereo, forward-facing speakers, really nice screen. So it beats even the iPhone for those kinds of capabilities. And in fact, the M9 literally is a case where Verizon we have a smoking gun, in a sense, that Verizon is actively trying. It's not just a matter of, oh, well, we just aren't implementing it. No, you're actually de-implementing something that in fact works there. So, and that's the differential deployment that we're talking about across different carriers. First, we had it between the U.S. and the international versions because it's more commonly set up overseas to have FM working. But now, as I said, the difference between U.S. carriers is really becoming obvious. The Sprint effect has been great. That's been all the growth, and we hope to see that moving forward with some new agreements we'll talk about in a second. And then, as I said, the iPhone is still a big obstacle. Okay, so the next area we want to look at is splitting up by carriers. This is just the carrier market share. A lot of folks think Verizon has a big lead over everybody else, and actually they don't. We got a little peace symbol going here with this pie chart. But you see that Verizon and AT&T are about neck and neck. That quarter to quarter, they toggle back and forth who's actually got the lead, but it's a rounding error, basically. So Verizon and AT&T are the two big players. They each have about a third of the market, and the other third is split pretty much also equally between Sprint and T-Mobile, with U.S. Cellular having a little 1% in there. And so that's the market share. And of course, as we've said, Sprint has been the one that since 2014 has been enabling FM on pretty much all of their Android phones. When you look at what we've got now, though, in terms of agreements for starting first of next year, in 2016, AT&T and T-Mobile have pledged that they're going to meet that. They're going to join that group that says, we too are requesting all our Android phone providers to enable the FM chip. And then we'll see what kind of app they end up loading, whether it's Next Radio preloaded like Sprint does, or some native app, or with instructions to go to download. And we would hope that once this market gets big enough, that we're going to start seeing a number of other users of the developers, rather, of applications that utilize the FM capability of a phone. And that's where we hope to see software development kits come out for at least Android to be able to utilize things. So that Next Radio is just one of perhaps many different applications, mobile apps, that can do cool things with the FM receiver on the phone. So this is where we hope that curve takes another inflection point as we get way more of the market on the bandwagon, at least the half of it that represents the Android side. Because look at what happens when you take the Apple iPhone out of the picture. Those red pie slices are the part of the of each of those market shares that is an iPhone platform. So it definitely kind of decimates the, well, pretty much cuts it in half almost. Again, you notice that AT&T has the lion's share of iPhones, because you may recall for the first couple of years the iPhone was out, it was exclusively AT&T. So a lot of folks who got hooked on the iPhone, drank the Kool-Aid there, ended up staying with AT&T as a result. So AT&T is over 40%. The other guys have about a third, somewhere around a third or a little more, a little less of their market share devoted to the iPhone. So we'll take what we can get, the Androids first, and maybe someday Apple, and then close to 100% penetration. That's the goal. We can dream, but we're actually moving close and continually gaining ground here, and so it's been a pretty positive story, but still a long way to go. Let's just take a peek, since we're all geeks here. What's actually going on inside the phone? This is just one phone that was popular a couple of years ago that our research firm that does the teardown analysis is allowing us, thanks to them, ABI Research, for letting us show this data, which normally their agreements don't let you do. So we appreciate the ability to share this with you. This phone, by the way, definitely has its warranty has been voided. It's been taken apart. And but be that as it may, you can see that's the little chip there that can includes Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and FM. And in fact, just to give you some scale there, that's the width of the phone there. Those two things on the far right, that is a, I do have a laser pointer here. Yes, yeah, let's see if this works. Yeah, these two things here are the, just to give you a sense of scale, that's the micro SD card, and that's the little SIM card for the Android phone. And so this is a lot smaller. That's like a, you know, truly a thumbnail size chip or less. Compared to the, say, micro SD card. So that's a, or that's actually the, yeah, and so that's a good sense of scale there. So that's and then the flip side, here's an X-ray. The phone's not taken apart yet, so you're looking through the phone, and you see both sides of the board. The connectivity chip again, same phone. Also notice, though, the audio jack, which somehow inside here is hooked up for the antenna to this phone. There's a lot of stuff going on that headphone jack, and there's a lot of competition for real estate there. So you can understand this is not an elementary consideration. To say you want one more thing to use that headphone jack, remember how, you know, the smart, with a company called Smart that puts the little credit card reader, makes any phone into a credit card reader, that uses the headphone jack, right? And there's a number of other things that the headphone jack is used for. So there's competition even for getting on board that the actual jack there to use it for an FM antenna. So this is a good bit of engineering in here to make this thing work. It's not just a matter of magically turning on the chip, in fairness to the manufacturers who have done it. But it's not to say that Apple can't. Apple has actually, if you look at their iPod, the iPod Nano, it has one of the coolest FM receivers anywhere ever made. It's got its ability to store the songs you've been listening to from the RDS. It's even got a pause buffer of 15 minutes or more of recording that you can pause the radio like a DVR, rewind it, listen to it, and it sounds great. And this is on a little tiny, you know, square Nano since the, I think since generation 5, and they're up to 7 now, they've had this very cool FM capability built in there. But that device does not have Wi-Fi. So it seems that Apple has a pretty strict rule that says, if the device is connectable to the internet, we're not going to turn on the FM. If it doesn't, Sure, and in fact, we're going to do the FM better than everybody else does on the iPod. And in fact, you can store for later syncing and for purchasing and so forth. Remember also that Apple is now also a service provider in that it has its own radio services, streaming internet services, and so it doesn't want competition potentially. That's one philosophy argument you might take on why they don't want to do it. On the other hand, Samsung, there's rumors that Samsung may try to compete. Samsung's the next biggest provider of phones, smartphones. Samsung may start a competing service model to the Apple radio and services. So that is a little worrisome because that could make it harder to get the FM enabled on Samsung phones, which are today the biggest manufacturer of FM-enabled smartphones. Not all of them yet, but some of their Android phones have it. And they're a pretty big number. So we hope to see that continue because right now we're leveraging the low-hanging fruit of, as I said, the phones are, the receiver's already there. If they start showing up with chips that don't have FM, at Wi-Fi and Bluetooth only, as one of the Qualcomm subsections called Atheros, a company they acquired that makes kind of low-end chips, they've come out with one chip that we've seen in one phone so far that has FM taken off of its connectivity chip. So that's worrisome, but we haven't seen that become a trend yet. So far, the Qualcomm and Broadcom chips that are being used, that's a Broadcom there, continue to have, even as they come up with new ones, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and FM. And there's even a new Broadcom chip that has NFC, the touchless credit card, kind of wave your phone at the credit card reader technology, contactless connectivity. That's also on that chip, and they still kept FM on there. So that's a good sign on the other side. Here's another phone, a big one, the Nokia Lumia 1520 is kind of like the 6 Plus or the Samsung Note, a real big, kind of feel like you're holding a dish up to your side of your head when you use it. So bigger chip, a bigger board, that's only part of it, but you see the centimeter scale on the bottom and along the edge here. And here's that chip. That's a Qualcomm chip that they put in a little wafer. Again, for scale, you've got the micro SD card and the SIM card, everything labeled on this one. So that's connectivity chip, again, pretty small. We take a little more of a drill down on this one. Flip it over. That same chip is on the other side right about here. And right next to it, this phone actually has an embedded FM antenna, as opposed to using the headphone jack. So it can be done. Obviously not getting a lot of the wavelength there for VHF, but a little tricky how they work it. We've not done comparisons compared to another phone with a headphone antenna. It would be kind of hard, given that this one doesn't support it, the different implementation. But nevertheless, it is done on some phones, not many. Here's that same chip taken apart a little more carefully. This is what it looks like in one when it's still all in one piece. And then this is the bottom. You can see connection points. And this is an X-ray of that chip, so you see the components inside the chip. And this is what it looks like. There's the chip inside the wafer package with some of the termination elements. And then to take a look at this shot even more closely, you see what these IDs are. This is the actual so-called SoC, solution on a chip that can be programmed to do various things. And this is the crystal, and this is a piece that is used for diplexing the two Wi-Fi bands together into the chip. And so this chip, again, does Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, which uses about this same band, the 2.4, and FM, all from a single time reference, and then with various terminations to get the connections to the both the input antenna elements and the data out to the other layers of the phone for decoding and presentation. So that's kind of a quick drill down in there. Let's take one look quickly at what finally is, I think, an important element of this. We've heard the arguments that, well, we don't want FM consuming our battery, or that even the FCC chairman saying, well, this thing takes battery. Well, it takes a lot less battery than the alternatives. This is a comparison that Sprint did with along with Next Radio that shows streaming services, they picked three, and they used the same audio over FM for this on the same phone, and basically five, six times better battery life just listening to FM. Now this is nice, and if you were using hybrid FM, that is using Next Radio, it turns out that it falls right in about in the middle. It's about 18 hours. But if you're just comparing streaming audio to FM audio, same audio, a pretty big difference there, five to six times more. And this is, it's nice, first of all, that you don't have to keep recharging. But in cases of emergency, where you want to, first of all, listen to the radio for the emergency updates and information, first of all, the network's probably down anyway, so you're not even going to be able to stream. But even if you could, you're not going to probably get any kind of local information about emergencies there. And when you have an emergency, a lot of times power grid's down too. So it's nice to have a little more time to be able to listen, actually days more potentially, to listen to your FM only on your phone, turn off your Wi-Fi, turn off your Bluetooth, keep your battery up there, and just have the little bit of trickle current that takes that the FM tuner takes to listen to emergency information when you can't recharge. So that's another kind of nice feature that we've been using in our advocacy efforts in DC and elsewhere to try to get the carriers and eventually Apple to implement and activate, fully activate, the FM capability that's already on the phones. So that's my pitch. And we have a few minutes left, I guess, for questions. So anything? Here's one. Another. Get our mics out there.
I've actually got two questions. I'll be fast. Skip. My carrier is TFW from Walmart. There's Cricket and other things like that. Does any of those carriers allow this?
No, you know, I should mention.
By the way, it's an iPhone.
Yeah. Well, so that answers it right there.
I could have got a Galaxy something.
I mean, so iPhone doesn't matter what carrier. You don't have it working. But some of the smaller carriers, we're not really counting. We're also not counting some of the smaller selling phones either. All these numbers come from what we're calling the top 70%. Phones, that's why we say top selling. And if you look at it, it's that ends up being 20 to 25 phones each quarter that get above that. And if it's a real long tail distribution. And we realize that when you get down past that 70%, there's a whole bunch of phones that don't move the needle at all in terms of whether they're activated or not. So they're really small.
This is on AT&T.
Yeah, it's on AT&T, but it's
an iPhone. This guy called Carlos Slim runs the place.
Yeah.
He's big.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
Second question, fast. Headlines a few months ago, Norway's going all digital. Okay.
Yeah.
You've never once mentioned IBOC. People in the IBOC business are talking sunset. Why not IBOC, and what happens if you sunset? This all goes away.
Yeah, pretty unlikely. You know, those guys in Norway, bartender, I'll have what they're having, you know, and make it a double. Drinking too much aquavit over there, I guess. I don't know. Whether or not that happens, it's a very different world than here. And really, that was the state services, the five channels that they do. It's kind of like a BBC. So maybe in our lifetime. But the point is here, we're just trying to get turned on what hardware is already on there. It's a big ask to say, hey, we got this new chip that's very expensive and requires much more battery life to put on there.
So, a Mach and a Sunset for IBOC.
Well, FM, Sunset, and IBOC in this country, I mean, I don't see any likelihood of that happening. AM, maybe. That's not even potential. But it's certainly possible. But we're trying to get the, you know, like I say, baby steps, right? Get the FM analog turned on first. Then, if we can get embedded antennas put in, even better. And then maybe FM, IBOC, and then maybe even ATSC 3.0 chips in there next. So one step at a time.
I actually have comment. I've played with the Moto E and with the Next Radio app, and I was actually really impressed with the performance of it. There was in Florida, there was several stations in the market feeding data to the service, and the now playing information was correct, and the sensitivity was great. I was really impressed with it.
Good.
My question is, this is the first I've seen that they're starting to integrate antennas into the phone.
Yeah.
And I mean, I work on a college campus where earbuds are ubiquitous. I mean, everybody's got them. But this is the first I've seen that they're actually starting to put them in the phones. And I guess the question is, how much feedback has there been for people to use them without headphones? And how I guess, ubiquitous is that going to be going forward?
Yeah, it's certainly not a trend. Actually, NAB Labs, or its predecessor, the Fast Road Project, funded a project a few years back to develop those. And there were a number of companies from around the world that did actually some pretty cool things with embedded FM antennas. But again, that's an ask that we're not even trying to get to yet. That's the next step, if we could. Meanwhile, as you said, everybody uses the wired headphones anyway. And you have seen a number of phones have this thing where when you plug in the headphones, you have at least the option to not mute the speaker so that you can actually use it. That's the purpose of that feature. And in some cases, that's a default now on the HTC. So you have to really, there are some capabilities there. The other important thing to think about with headphones is that with Bluetooth headphones, wireless headphones, now you don't have the antenna. So we would like to see an embedded antenna to solve that problem, because that's a bigger trend. And the final element there is, if you're really thinking about using this for emergency, it's one thing for emergency information after you know there's an emergency. But if you're trying to use it for emergency alerting, you have the phone in your pocket, you're not listening to it, you're not going to get the FM unless you keep your headphones plugged in, and nobody does that. So,
is there an initiative now? You can get a decent sounding Bluetooth speaker for $20.
Mm-hmm.
Is there promise that an FM app's going to work with those Bluetooth speakers as well?
It could. Even today, I have one. I just was using this weekend. If you want to use it for FM, you just have to have the headphones plugged in too. It still works, doesn't change anything. You plug the headphone in and then you do your Bluetooth speaker pairing and it works fine. For any audio on your phone, and to get the FM to work, you need the headphone plugged in. That's fine, it works fine. No interference there, not mutually exclusive.
Another question? I wanted to ask a question regarding regarding the actual use of the FM receiver in phones that are activated with the FM receiver. Are there any statistics on just how many of those users are actually using the FM receiver?
The only information we actually have on that is from the Next Radio folks, and they have a good bit of data on the usage, because one of the things that their app does is tracks that. for obvious reasons. And so they're finding what they think is very positive results in terms of the numbers. I don't recall the numbers off the top of my head, because and they keep updating it every quarter. I think that's on their website. You can check that out. And if not, you can always send Paul Brenner an email, and he'll be happy to fill you in on all the progress they're making in terms of usage. Other than that, just straight FM usage, we don't have any data, and there's no real way to track that. Even if you were a Nielsen user, you've got to have that little adapter plugged in to feed your PPM through the headphone. It's kind of a, and even then, they don't track that separately. So there's no real way to get that data that we know of offhand. So. But certainly the Next Radio folks say the usage is strong. They also made a point that says the time spent listening goes way up with a Next Radio when you're using hybrid radio as opposed to just listening to radio on average. Which kind of makes sense because there's just more to keep you interested in looking at on the phone. Okay, who's got the mic? Yeah, go ahead.
Henry Ruedel, older than third engineer. I am retired, but I worked for Qualcomm MediaFlow, and I still have my VCast phone. So my thought is, why are you stopping at radio FM?
Right.
Yeah, and the tuner's there. It's going to easily tune any UHF channel. We were on 55. Mm-hmm. And with digital television broadcasting, it's just data manipulation. I don't see why your smartphone or even your stupid phone, it eliminates commercials, can't be used for FM, using even the case as an antenna, as we used to do in a lot of things.
Yeah.
And you know, have your television and your FM radio and anything else you care to all in the same box.
Yeah, that's certainly on the roadmap. And the one issue with ATSC, the current ATSC system, is that it doesn't perform real well for mobile, as we know. But certainly, one of the key components of ATSC 3.0 is mobile reception, direct mobile reception, even to handheld devices. Which and if you're talking about UHF, it is actually easier to use 700, 600 megahertz within the device. However, we are still going to have VHF TV. In fact, we may have more VHF TV than we do today, post-repack. So we have to consider that too. But yeah, that's certainly a roadmap issue that we can take a lot of the learning that we're doing. And again, like I said, baby steps here. Just get the feature that's already in the chipset and the implementation coming right out of Broadcom and Qualcomm. And if we can get, and you know, you see the resistance you have even to that. But if we can break through that resistance, it may set the precedent to say, okay, now that you got that, you know, here's the next step, and here's the next step. And hopefully an ATSC 3.0 in 2018 or so might actually start showing up with chips on the phones.
I really wanted to amplify your points about emergency communications. That's important for broadcasters to have a role in the future, I think.
Yeah.
And thank you for your work in this area. But I've read some articles coming out of Europe that made the point that anytime anything unusual happened, there was a large crowd, a riot, a natural emergency, something brought a lot of people together in one location, streaming was completely ineffectual.
Yeah, yeah. Sure.
And so these writers were pushing back against the attitude of government broadcasters and others that, well, we can shut down the radio transmitters. We'll just stream to everybody. And while there are some technological fixes for that in the mobile and wireless world, they're never going to be as simple and straightforward as broadcast radio.
Absolutely. As long as you're talking unicast, you cannot scale anywhere close to what broadcast can give you. Well, broadcast is infinitely scalable, right? So you're never going to get that. Even with the EMBMS and the other kinds of LTE systems that approximate broadcast, or they turn it up, they switch the cells over to try to carry more broadcast, but then they have to carry less unicast for phone calls, so they don't want to do that all the time. So yeah, the idea that streaming can replace broadcast, particularly in those kinds of everybody crashing at once to the same site or just trying to use the network. Clearly a broadcaster's advantage there. And plus, broadcasters doing what we do best anyway in terms of having good emergency information, connections to the first responders and all that, so it just makes a lot of sense for broadcasters to get on this platform to both for commercial value as well as safe public safety and emergency alerting. I think maybe it's time for one more. And then I'll have put you back on schedule. So much for being ahead.
What about multipath with the headphone antenna? And insight buildings and things and
yeah.
Headset coming down and back up. And has that been a problem?
It is an issue. Just like any analog VHF reception is, but I will say in my experience recently, it's gotten a lot better. I remember listening on the early iPods, and there was a good bit more multipath. Not sure what mitigation techniques they're using here, but it does seem to have improved. But yeah, you're still going to have that issue just like you would have with any FM receiver, and especially with an antenna that's swinging around as you're moving. But so that's just part of it, comes with the territory. Before I go, I want to thank the folks at Wisconsin Broadcasting, Chuck and Linda, for putting this together and for inviting us. We're really happy to be here, and great to see such a good turnout. Really looking forward to seeing that amazing, huge exhibit hall later today. And I'll be here just today. Unfortunately, I have to run off to another event in Orlando for the rest of the week. Bad timing, but I'll be here all today and tonight, and look forward to catching up with more of you if you have any other questions or want to share some info. And keep folks honest on this in your state or states. This folks coming here from a lot of places, and we'll try to keep the pedal to the metal in D.C. as well to see if we can keep this going and getting eventually to 100% activation of FM, at least FM, if not more, on smartphones. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Skip.